pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. It was Earth Hour last Saturday, the 25th of March, and on the podcast today, we have one of the most nature-friendly and successful entrepreneurs in Bengaluru for a conversation. Sustainability is his middle name. His ability to successfully manage a juice business with no pile-up for the landfills has become his trademark. He does not serve the natural juices in paper or plastic cups with straws. In fact, he has no single-use plastic in his juice center or even distributes tissue papers. Eat Raja has proved it is possible to be zero waste, sustainable, and still be successful in business. Career-wise, he has an interesting mix. An engineer who went on to become a popular radio jockey and then moved on to become an inspirational entrepreneur. A very interesting example of listening to the voice in me. Our impact on nature should be minimal is his motto, something he learned from his college club. His zero waste policy makes him serve his innovative juices in fruit shells, from watermelons to banana peels. His cutlery is natural. A trend that initially found criticism today is what makes Eat Raja exclusive and appreciated for his nature-friendly serving style. He stayed put with this idea, and today not only has franchisees locally, but is busy looking at inquiries globally too. Innovation is hallmark. Engineering the fruit shells, his trademark, and he's trending on social media. Listen in as Raja shares his journey from a brat of an all-rounder in school to life lessons he learned in college to running a business successfully and meaningfully. Our zero hero believes that sports made him who he is. You win some, you lose some is his attitude to be successful. He says, after completing 1,800 plus days in his business, his mission is successful and he's going strong every day. This interview has taken a year, Raja. So I think a lot of coincidences in play. The universe has put us together for this conversation. So welcome to You and I with Rashmi Shetty.
Thank you so much, Rashmi. I feel privileged, honored to be on the show with you. You and I, yes. With Rashmi.
Yes, and You and I also stands for the uniqueness and individuality each of us carries.
Oh, wow.
And the whole purpose of this conversation is to explore your uniqueness and your individuality, where they came from, and a lot of it begins in childhood. So yes. Today you have a huge Instagram following and you are well known in Bangalore as the juice person, popularly called as Eat Raja. When it comes to youngsters, they love the way you serve the juices.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. And do the Eat Raja that you have become, I want to know what little Raja is like. Was all this about nature, sustainability, part of your lifestyle right from the time you're little? And how did the journey progress from little Raja to the Eat Raja / Travel Raja that you're famous as?
Well, the little Raja was just like any other Indian Raja, who's a brat, who's troublesome, who's always playing pranks like any other average kid would do in India. So I was pretty much the same. I really did not know what sustainability was or what was being eco-friendly back then when I was a child. Because at that time, none of us were really, or maybe situations weren't that grave as it is now. So now I feel there's an increased consciousness about what's happening around us. Back then, maybe, 30, 40 years ago, it wasn't really that concerned. I mean, Bangalore was still green, less pollution. We didn't have mobile phones. So we were playing around with chit-chatting with friends and with the grandmas, grannies and all of that. So that was how a typical childhood of any 80s and 90s person would be from Bangalore. So mine was also pretty much the same. I used to go every Sunday. We used to go swimming. We used to play cricket. We used to climb up mango trees, pluck mangoes. Oh, summers used to be so much fun. We all used to be out. Like, we used to live in a compound, like which has about 15 to 20 houses. So we all used to get together in the night, chit chat, and we used to play in the night, especially when there were new moon days. And we really loved. So much of bonding was there, maybe because none of us had mobile phones to back then. So we had a lot of time to spend with each other. And that's how my childhood was also. But the sustainability part of it, or anything that's got to do with eco-friendliness, came to me the day I joined my college, BMS College of Engineering. And I credit all whatever I'm doing today to my college and my college seniors who got me introduced to zero waste, minimalist lifestyle.
Oh, wow. Okay, so before you got into engineering, so how were you as a student? You said you were a brat, but you said you also did engineering. So were you a very good student
in school? I was a very good student. In fact, in my school days, I'll tell you what the irony is later. Okay, in my school, I was a topper. I was also good at sports. So I was also the class monitor. I was the house captain. So I was like, name it, I'm always there. And I was always the kind of a person who's the A-lister there. So I had a great schooling. Although it was a very small school, I had great schooling. I was the captain of Kabaddi. I was the captain of Koko. I was also the captain of my house. I was a topper. Only mathematics I used to always.
Such a special student is teacher's pet for sure. Were your friends jealous of you?
Not really. Actually, I was quite popular in my school days also. So I wouldn't say fan following, but there were a lot of people who used to like me a lot. Because my parents actually never really went to school. So, but they made sure that I go to school and I pick up all the right habits. So I'm so happy that my parents got me schooled at a, it was a very average school, but they ingrained as right values is what I think. So it was a very poor people's school. I still remember my, we still were not able to pay fees, although the fees were really less in schools. And schools are very accommodative back then. And it was very, very sweet, very nice. I mean, we never felt like it was a school meant for business. It was a school meant to impart values. I still meet my teachers and I'm so happy. You know, we have had some of the best teachers who taught us in the school too. And I was a brat. I was good at studies also. So basically, I was an all-rounder in my school. But everything changed when I joined engineering. You will not believe, the same guy who was a topper in school actually double dropped. As in, I lost 2 years continuously in engineering. And then I also made a very failed attempt to copy from somebody else's paper during my engineering. And then I got debarred for 3 semesters. All those things have happened in my life. All ups and downs.
And what changed, Raja, from school to college?
Nothing much. So the fact that, I had joined engineering and it was one of the best colleges in India. Yeah. I was very excited. And I had taken a branch which was not the same branch that I wanted. So I was not half interested. So I was doing mechanical engineering. And then the last semester, that is the last few days before we move on to the next year, is when I got a branch change. And I got into medical electronics. Medical electronics and mechanical were like North Pole and South Pole. So they had no connection. So I could not prepare for the exams well. And I had to flunk. And after that, again, one more year, I continuously failed because I couldn't clear the subjects. So that was a sad part, but I got to spend a lot of time in college. So I'm happy. Yeah, I had an extended college life.
I love the way positively you're looking at it now. But at that point, from being a topper in school to being somebody who failed, what was your state of mind?
You know, interestingly, I never, see, I knew that I wasn't a bad student. It was just that I could not get a branch in the right time. I couldn't study well. So what happened was, interestingly, although I flunked, I still used to go to college. It's very, very interesting to know. Because I felt I am coming to college to gain knowledge, not for attendance or not for anything else. So I used to tell my teacher, and none of them really stopped me. Although I had flunked and I had a year back, I used to go attend all the classes because I said, I really want to study and I want to understand these subjects. Anyway, it's just a matter of another 6 months and I'll be back in college. So if I come and attend the classes now, I would be better prepared, is what I had told them. I still remember that. After a while, I kind of started feeling out of the place because everybody's name was being called and my name was not there on the rolls.
Yeah.
And it used to make me kind of uncomfortable. And many new teachers were joined. They were wondering as to who is this guy whose name is not there on the roll and he's yet attending the classes. And then when I explained to them that, you know, I'm actually a year back student and I don't want to get spoiled or I don't want to distract, I thought I'll attend the classes because I really love studying. Nobody really said, no, you shouldn't sit in since you've not paid fees, nothing of that sort. So I said, okay, I said, that's all. But somewhere after some time, I pulled myself out of the classes too. Because it was, I mean, there were many times that they had field trips and they said, okay, you guys, okay, you form a team and you guys go there. And then I was like, okay, where do I belong now? Because I'm not part of this class.
Yeah.
So those kind of things made me feel a little bad. But then I went back and then I studied again and somehow I managed to clear engineering. But I still keep going to college. In fact, next week again, I'm going to college. So every now and then I'm like, I've never really felt that I've graduated out of college. I'm still friends with all the present batch students. Of course, all my HODs, my principals, everybody's still friendly with me. They're very happy. They're very happy to see me being one of the worst students to doing something great in radio and then switching career from radio career to something totally never expected, that is zero waste.
Yeah.
I go back to take classes also now in my own college.
This is such a beautiful space you're in, Raja. You meet a lot of college students.
Yeah.
I saw most of your reels. And all of them are with the youngsters. But today, because of social validation, the social media, students go to the extent of committing suicide out of the fear of failure. And many of them who actually succumb to suicide pass, they get good grades. So such a moment where failure is such a delicate part of growing up in student life, what would you like to tell the students who are attempting courses like engineering, which is tough? After school, engineering would be a tough course, or medicine, or any course for that matter, would be tough enough for an average or above average student. So they just need to work a little harder, and failure is not the end of life. So
yeah.
What would you want to tell them at this point of time?
Look at me. That's exactly what I would like to tell them. I was once a topper. Then I flunked engineering 2 years continuously. Then I tried copying because I felt that, oh, I am a topper. I can't, you know, fail. So I managed to copy and then I got caught. I got debarred. Then I learned a lesson, very important lesson in my life. And then again, I sat, studied, and I came back again to college. So you need to get back that pride, the respect that you already had, right? All that was also there. And today, when I look back, I say, I've had a very jeopardized kind of education, but then what we learn out of our bad experiences will really. So when it comes to suicide, even I had planned to commit suicide after my second puke because I thought I'd done actually pretty well, reasonably well at least. But then I somehow thought, okay, if I flung, then I'm going to commit suicide. Because there were a lot of expectations from my parents or anybody else. Because my parents come from a very humble background. So they had a point to prove to all their relatives, my father's side relatives and mother's side relatives, that although we don't have money, although we don't have a lot of property and stuff like that, We will make sure that our kids are educated well. And I was thinking, what if I flunk in my second POC? How will I show my face? And I had also thought, okay, I'm going to commit suicide. But none of those things happened because the way how I was trained. It's important that most kids learn at very young age to fail. If they don't fail and then succeed, they'll never be able to tell themselves that, yes, one day I failed, one day I will succeed. And that comes only from sports is what I strongly believe. Because in sports, like we all know, India plays Pakistan, India plays England. Not every match do we win. We win some, we lose some. These are all golden codes given by so many people. We just need to strictly believe in them. So today is a bad day. Tomorrow is an excellent day. Day after tomorrow, we don't know we're going to see that day or not. So all those kids, like today, I saw the 10th standard exams started. Yeah. I think second POC exams just got over. Some of the boys who are working in my shop are also from POC. So they just finished their exams and they came back to work. So I was telling them, big deal, even if you don't clear, it's okay. Because exams are never the best judge of who you are, what you are. If you don't clear, okay, try something else. So nowadays, I think parents maybe should be more friends with kids to tell them, it's okay even if you fail. If you don't like it, if you don't want to clear it, it's okay. Try doing something else. That's how I think parents should be. Unnecessary pressure like, oh, I have to make my son an engineer, a doctor. These are all tougher subjects and not very easy to study. And there's definitely no point in pushing them to study something that they wanted. Yeah. I think they should allow their kids, anybody for that matter, you know, it's their right to study what they want to study. If they want to study gemology, if they want to study mixology, if they want to do, you know, baking course or make juice course, they should be allowed to do what they love doing. So that would be like a big boon for all the students. Because they are unnecessarily going through a lot of tension that, oh, I have to prove this to myself or to my father, to my mother. I feel it's all not necessary. Today, it's a much, much more educated world that we are living in. Back then, maybe 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was a lot of pressure on all the students to study, study. And we had lesser distractions at that time. So the only thing is either you play outside or you come and study. Today, the kids have so many challenges. They have PUBG, they have Instagram, the Facebook, notifications coming every other second. So difficult to study. Even if they manage to just get some time to attend classes, that in itself is a big thing. So forget all those things of, you know, they should top, they should be able to succeed. Of course, engineering, medicine are great fields. People should try for it. But if you don't make it, no big deal. The world doesn't come to an end.
True, very true. And so from this engineering stream that you were in, how did RJ happen?
Well, thanks to again my school or all the different competitions that I used to take part as a child. So I was an all-rounder in the school. So I also used to take part in Rangoli competition, but I never won. I used to take part in every competition. So I was an all-rounder. And I was quite a guy to watch out for when we had a debate or a speech. So it comes right from my school days that I was inculcated into speaking. Or I never think twice when I have to say speak my mind. So I was very, 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 you know, bold enough to say anything that I felt like. If it was wrong or if it was right, I would just open up and say it loud and clear. So that way, somewhere I think the talking abilities, speaking to people, conversation, empathetic understanding and talking to people, all of these things, I was groomed in my school and college days. And there was a call in the Times of India newspaper for people who can speak really well, blah, 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 like all the radio jockey qualities. I said, okay, I think I have it all. And at the end of the ad, it said, do you have it in you? I looked back and I said, like, my friends were there, like, do I have it in me? I don't know. Let's go give it a try. So I went and gave a try. I didn't know that I would get selected. Then the next day, I got selected and things really changed after that. And there was no looking back. Every other day was such a happening day because in media, no day is a dull day. So there's something or the other to always be done. It's a very happening scenario. So honestly, I would say that Although I worked in radio for 13 years, for 13 years I actually enjoyed like second innings in a college. That too, a paid holiday. What more do you want? To have all the fun in radio, I was getting paid, I was becoming popular. It was such a fairy tale kind of.
Did you have which channel were you in, and which what did you have a different name for radio?
So I started my career, radio career, with Radio Mirchi Canada. Then it became,
Hindi.
now of course Hindi is also there. So I worked in Radio Mirchi Canada first, and after 4 years of working as a radio jockey in Canada, then Red FM Hindi started in Bangalore. So I immediately switched to Red FM Hindi, and then after that I went on to work with another international radio station, NUM Radio. So 13 years I spent in radio. Such a rewarding experience. Such, I mean, if anybody would still like to take a job in radio, they must. It's such a lovely profession, is what I feel, because you have this power to, change people's mood. Some people, when they're depressed, they listen to radio, and if they get a chance to speak to the radio jockey, their life is done. So it's like, when I used to be on the mic, I used to think, okay, today I'm going to change at least about 10 people's life. And we always are loaded with some goodies to be given to our listeners. So the moment you give them, even if it's a meal voucher, they're so happy. So I realized that we as radio jockeys have the power to change somebody's mind. We influence them right there by playing a song, talking to them, making them feel happy, making them feel special. So it's a huge task, and we are empowered to do that, and that's the beauty of radio.
Yeah, true, true. Because 10 years I was an RJ with FM Rainbow,
So
and
you know it well. You
oh
know it well.
yes, oh yes, really well. And every word you said is so true. Because more than the listener, I think we get so much joy
Yeah, I
speaking
used
about it.
to every day look forward for, okay, today I'm going to do this on the show. I have to speak about this. So it was all about your own persona, right? So, and I was known as Beat Raja then. And I
Oh, okay. Yes, I have heard your shoes.
so my only job was to go around the city and tell what all is
What
happening
is
in the
happening?
city. So every morning I used to get up like, okay, today there's a college fest happening, this star is coming to this mall, okay, there's a launch of a book, okay, there is something else happening over there, oh, there's a pothole on this road, or somebody else met with an accident, somebody donated blood. Everything was news for me, and I've really enjoyed working in radio. So much of exposure, so many people you get to network with. It's a brilliant space.
Yes, that truly is. But then from that experience and a job that had you out on your toes literally every day,
Yeah.
to becoming from Beat Raja, you dropped the B and became the Eat Raja. How
Yeah.
did that transition happen?
Well, you know what? Certain things in life you can't really change, right? So my dad was running this juice center for the last, I think, 40 years or so. He started in 1970, so he was running this juice center. After he passed away, we had no clue what to do with the shop. I shut it for about 8 months because I had no clue, Rashmi, how to even make juices, how to cut vegetables, because I've never really done that. And then after my father passed away, my mom said, okay, I can't let the shop just be like this, because he has run it for about 40 years. So let me just continue the legacy. I'll just go sit there, maybe try and sell something. So she went and she started. Actually, Eat Raja started in my mom's name. So she was the one who initially started everything. Then
What about the name Raja? How did it become Eat Raja?
Rashmi, what's your mother's name?
My mother's name Sharda.
Sharda will give you a call and say, Rashmi, what are you doing? It's already 10:30, 11 in the night. And then I say, Mama, I'm a little busy on a Zoom call. I have to do it for this show. Like, oh, you do all those things. But first you eat, Raja. You eat something and then you do everything. So in India, and then particularly in South India, every kid is a Raja. Okay. They address it that way only over here, be it a guy or a girl. And even if you become 70 years, and if your father or mother are there who are 90 years, they'll still call to check. The first thing is, did you have something to eat? You haven't? Okay, first you eat, Raja, then do whatever you want. So that is how the name came. And the credit goes to my pet and my father, because my pet and my father were so inseparable. My father used to go sit on the dining table to have food, and my pet Scooby used to jump and go sit right next to him. So my father used to feed him, saying, "Eat, Raja, eat this biscuit, eat this thing, eat that." I used to get so annoyed when I'm sleeping here. Early morning, about 6:30, they both start chit-chatting. And my father will be like, "Okay, eat, Raja, eat this biscuit, eat that one, eat this." Like, ah, who will ever call somebody like that and talk to the, you know, pet? So I used to always hear the conversations. And after they both passed away, I said, it's apt to call the shop Eat Raja, because one, it's my father's, you know, effort. And of course, my doggy Scooby, we miss him a lot. So I said, okay, I have to do this for them. So that's how the name Eat Raja came about. Interestingly, now the justification is such that I can say, well, you come to Eat Raja, you don't just drink juices, you can also eat them. So you generate no waste.
Yeah. So tell me how that transition happened. Your mother was going into Eat Raja and managing the place.
Yeah, I was still in radio at that time. So I was working for an international radio station. So my mom was taking care of the shop. But see, at the age of 70, she started going to work. Can you beat that? When she was always home quarantined for about 50 years, ever since she got married, all that she had to do was sit at home, take care of the kids and make sure things are all in place when my father comes back. So at 71, she decides, okay, I'm going to go sit in the shop and make business. And that's the way how Eat Raja started. And now we complete 5 years exactly yesterday, 28th of March. So we complete 5 successful years of saying no to any single use disposable. And I'm so, so happy about it.
Congratulations. But where did you get that idea? Because outside of
juice,
there are straws and cups in the name of paper cups.
So I'm a OG, okay? I'm the original and see, I'll tell you why. My mentor, my inspiration is Vani Murthy in Malaysia. She's been doing some amazing work. In fact, we from Malaysia, another group is there. Swabhimana Initiative Trust is there. All of these people, knowledgeable people, hardworking people, really passionate people. We have done a lot of things for Malaysia. And that's where I said, okay, I have a shop. And in this shop, when my father was running, so much of garbage is coming out. And since I was always cultured into zero waste, minimalist lifestyle from my college, I said, I can't let this happen in my own backyard. I'm going and telling everybody, don't waste, plant trees, this, that, and all. And then I come back to my shop to see so much of plastic paper and all that. So it was very easy for me to convince my mom, because she comes from a rural background where they have lived their life without any of these single-use disposable, no tissues, no plastic bags and all of that. So I said, let's just go back in time and do the same at the shop. And I took my inspiration from Vani Murthy ma'am. I consulted her, how can I make it zero waste? What can I do? And she said, just say no to anything that is single use disposable. I just came back to the shop, blindly applied that. I said, I'm not going to give you any single use disposable. No juices served in paper cup, plastic cup, no straws given, no tissues, no cola, no PET water bottle being sold. Till date, it's I think 1,800 days till now. Every single day we've gone and said the same. But having said that, people stopped coming, the sales dropped because we had a lot of conditions and restrictions. People are so used to drinking juices with straw that if you ever give them a juice without a straw, they look at you like this, like, char paise zyada le le, lekin straw to de de. That kind of an attitude. It was very difficult for me initially to convince people they can drink juices without the straw. But then people weren't really interested. Like, big deal, it's okay. Yeah, we all know about global warming, we all know about plastic hazard and all that. It's okay. They should do that. So I said to myself that I need to change the way how people are thinking. But make it attractive was the challenging part. So I looked at the fruit and I said, like, hey, damn, this is a fruit. Why can't we just scoop out the fruit and make the juices and serve it back in the same container after they are drunk? I mean, after they drink the juices, I can use those fruit shells to still feed cows, make lot of manure, and so many things can be done with it. And that was my driving force. And I said, okay, let's do this, you know, to single-use disposables, and we engineer our waste, actually. We make sure that it becomes another product. So that's the beauty of the job.
Yeah, I love the way you said it. You engineer your waste. But taking you one step back, you said college taught you how to have a
Yes, yes,
sustainable
yes.
lifestyle. What is it that you learned in college?
See, it was not even my college lecturers. You know, BMS College of Engineering has a very active student-run clubs. Okay,
Yeah.
somebody is somebody. I mean, if you feel that you are interested, you can just go open up a club and say, "Hey, I am a numismatic collector. So if you have coins, come over here. Let's build a team. Let's showcase the coins." Or if somebody else loves Bharatanatyam, they form their own group and they say, "Hey, you guys, if you like Bharatanatyam, come here. We'll teach you. We'll put up a show." It was like that. So my seniors who were running the mountaineering club, they were the ones who taught me. They said, "We have come to a waterfall. We'd gone on a holiday." They said, "When you thought of coming to this place, you thought it's going to be beautiful, but you come and see now, there's so much of plastic. So now it's our responsibility to give back a waterfall that is clutter-free." So they made us pick up all the garbage and all, put it in the bag. We brought it back to the city. On that day, when I had to do that, I cursed myself and I said, like, "I'm not going to be back with these guys for any mountaineering club activities." But then later on, once I was done, I felt so nice that I've done something great. I couldn't have alone done it, but all of us joined together and we did it. And then on, I realized, okay, this is something amazing. I think we need to do more of it. So I went around, joined a club, and then later on, I went on to become the president of the club. And I still am super active in the club. We do a lot of events and these things actually change. So I realized that, you know, our impact on nature should be very minimal. So I still remember when we had gone for a trek to a waterfall. Normally, all guys, when they have to have bath, they put all on the soap and they just go dive into the pool of water. All that is a strict no. In my college, my seniors taught us that minimum impact policy. So if you want to have bath, go ahead and have bath. Don't put the soap. You want a thrill, right? Just go jump. And if at all you want to have your soapy water bath, then come over here. We'll dig a pit. Everybody go one by one, stand there and have bath. And so that all the, you know, toxins get reduced and they don't go spoil the water there. So that is how we were all taught about it. And we were always encouraged to carry our own tiffin boxes, our water bottle, making sure that there is nothing that is a single-use disposable. So these things I learned from my college club, and eventually it became a part of my life. Subconsciously, I've never ever thrown any plastic paper outside my bag or my pockets. It straight away goes there, and I empty it only when I find a dustbin. And that's how, I think that's what college taught us, how to be sustainable and how we can have a better life. So thanks to my college, my seniors in the mountaineering club, had they not taught me what it is today, it rather wouldn't have been possible.
Okay, so here you were, all set to continue this sustainable lifestyle and decided to scoop out and re-engineer or engineer the fruit
Yeah.
waste into how exactly you serve your customers. So initially, what was the kind of reaction that you got? No straw, no tissue, no
Oh.
water, and you're giving them the juice in the fruit that you scooped out?
I can't forget those days of initial struggle that we have had. Almost everybody said, "What crazy way of giving juices instead of a watermelon? I don't want to buy it. You put it to me in a glass and give it to me." And I said, "No, if you're going to drink watermelon, it should be only this." So for 5 years, we have done exactly this. And when I look back and I say, "Oh my God, it's really amazing. I never thought I would survive in the market in the first 2 months." Later on, we somehow pulled it. A lot of big social media influencers started coming to my shop, and then overnight we became very, very, very popular. Even till date, we are popular, trending, because we do so many innovative things over
So, what was the first innovative thing that you did, Raja, that looking back now you're absolutely proud of?
The first thing was we did watermelon because I had seen that watermelons that we get were really tiny and small, just like a cup. I said, "Hey, this is really cool. I think we can just chop it and scoop out the fruit, put the juicer, and then pour it back and give it to them. And there you go. I see so many cows eating plastic. Instead, after they're done with the juices, they can feed the cow as well." And that's how actually we started off with the zero waste policy. And then, of course, I was not the guy ever to use anything that is single-use disposable at my shop. So no tissues were ever given, no plastic bottle, no paper bottle. Some of it's still there, but they are still long-term usage of the bit, whatever plastic it is, hard plastic. So that way we made sure that single-use disposables were a strict no. Even now, many of the boys who come to work at my shop, I tell them, if you're coming by bicycle, you get 10 rupees more. If you come by bike, I'll take 5 rupees from you. So these kind of things, I think we can teach only when they are young, and that's the right age. So I make sure that I go to all colleges just to brainwash them and tell them that, hey, you know what, there's a much better way to do what you wanted to do. And I've been successful.
Yeah. What has been the best compliment so far?
Initially, when we were giving juices to our customers, people were like, I don't know what this is, crazy thing. I'm not going to have these juices. It's all falling all of my clothes and all of that. But one of the best compliments was, I think it was around before COVID. I was just mopping the floor and, you know, doing my daily chores. And there was somebody who was going to the airport to get on to a flight. They stopped by, they came to me and they just said, Raja, what you're doing is fantastic. I just came, took a detour just to meet you and say hi. Maybe in future we'll meet. And he left from there. I honestly felt that was a very, 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 very a proud moment for me. Like, okay, not bad. I managed to put a shop and it's kind of running. So I was very, very happy with that.
Okay. And what was your most dullest moment when you decided to take over from your mother and make sure that you're going to run this business? In the initial part, when you said there was rejection, the most dullest moment.
Yeah. So my mom was like, please give them one tissue. It's okay. Nothing's going to happen. Please let's retain the customers. It's very important and all that. I said, don't worry. Nobody ever stopped them to carry their handkerchief. So why should we waste money on buying tissues when we know that it's not going to be of great use? So that way, we made sure that everything that we were doing were single-use disposables, completely avoided, and only reusables. So even we don't give parcel of juices. We ask them to get their own container so that they can take the juice and go. So this is how initially people started making fun of us, laugh at us. But then as we started becoming popular in terms of media coverage or stars coming out of shop, then it became easier for me to deal with the situation. Like, okay, it's just a matter of another 1 month. If people are saying something bad about me or kachre ke saath kaam karna and all of that, it's okay. So this is how the mentality of people were who started coming to work at our shop. We successfully changed the way how they think. So those people who initially said no to watermelon juices being served instead of a watermelon, today they wait for not hours, but so many minutes to just get hold of that because they know that this is something really nice and worthy. And a lot of my customers are kids.
Yeah. And looking back, Raja, what kept you going? What gave you that sense of belief that this is going to work? Because people were not used to being served juices in guavas that are scooped out and watermelons that are scooped out, right? Bananas. I saw a field there, you scooped out the banana. And I was like, how will he justify a banana to a small guava to a watermelon? How was the quantity measured? And I heard you say that you get 3 refills with the banana.
Yes.
I was like, wow. So what is it that helped you sustain yourself and your mindset at those times when you set out on a journey? I would call it the road not taken. Which was a surprise to the world outside. And I'm sure there are more naysayers than people who accepted you. What kept you going at that time?
See, every day I used to say, why the hell am I doing this? I'll just quit and go back to radio or do anything else. But not this. It's so difficult to convince people that we will not give juices. They put their hand to see if they have any straw anywhere there. And I would say, sorry. And then I openly challenge them. Now, you can drink this without a straw. Come, let me demonstrate it to you. Show, join them. A lot of good things we share, even when my customers come and ask for things like parcel and anything else that is single-use disposable. I tell them that there's no need for you to do this. I mean, nobody ever asked you. So why do it if it's not eco-friendly at all?
What sustained your mindset? What told you that this is going to succeed?
Every day, I used to feel like giving up. But then next morning, the call of, oh, today we're going to do something new. used to excite me. And I knew that this was a really tough one. And then I used to say, hey, it's so tough to convince people. And I had opened my shop at a place where there's market, garbage, all of it. So it's important to be there. And I actually honestly feel I was the Kichar ka Kamal because I had almost successfully managed to do this. I used to just look into the mirror and say, you've done it for one day. You can do it today also. And now, having said that so many times, now we're looking at 1,800 today. So that was my motivation. I said, like, okay, if not today, day after tomorrow, maybe it will work. This is how we started doing. And today, I'm very happy that we never gave up when we had really bad days. Nobody ever knew that, you know, a banana smoothie can be served instead of a banana.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy that I could think of it and I'm able to run it. There's a huge crowd always outside the shop, which means that our juices are still in demand. So I'm very happy.
Yes, and now you're really spreading yourself far and wide. So tell us the progress, the growth, and your proud moments.
5 years ago, it was all about just saving that space, making it functional. That's all.
Yeah.
But then when my mom took over it, when I quit radio and I joined her to help her around, that's when things started really happening. And once we realized that we've become quite popular, now it became an additional responsibility of not doing anything that could hurt the brand name or that could go against what we had already said. So I used to motivate myself. And of course, whenever I had problems, I used to give a call to Vani ma'am or anybody else to see how things can be made better. You always need a shoulder to cry.
Yes. Okay? Yes.
So you need to find that one person. Yeah. It could be anybody, maybe parents or brother or friend, somebody or the other. You need to vent out all your frustration and feelings. And then you go back, your work is going to be a lot more productive instead of carrying all the baggages with you of emotions primarily.
Yeah. And Vani is such an amazing human being. So I'm sure you had the strongest shoulder to cry on.
Yeah, because I've seen so many deaths also after that. My mom passed away because of COVID. My pet also passed away. I lost my dad much before we started Eat Raja. So, but like I said, being in sports helped me because in sports, that's what happens. Some days you win, some days you lose. But you got to keep the spirit high. And that's what I do at our outlets.
Yes, that's so true. Showing up every day.
Now, yeah. So there's this quote, dress up and show up. That's
it. That's exactly what you did. And in the process, any memorable recognition that you got, which you treasure really close to your heart?
Yes, there are many such, in fact, not just one or two. I can't handpick and say this was the best. But then I got a call from many big celebrities, of course, called me and wished me, say, I saw your, you know, juice shop and it's amazing. Those kind of things were there. But having said that, a lot of people have supported also. A lot of people. In fact, one of the earliest calls that we got was from Lata ma'am, Rajnikant's wife, and she showed extreme interest that we would like to open your outlets in we were based out of Bangalore only. Then they said, why don't you open one in Chennai? And now today, as I speak to you, I'm also talking to people in UAE so that we can plan to open one in Dubai or Sharjah or any place. So that way, there were a lot of people who supported us, and that's the future also. Now, I hope to give away a lot more franchises, make sure that things work. And that's the plan.
Yeah, touch wood, Raja, for the attitude and mindset that you have and the complete principled way in which ethically you did your business. I'm sure the one above is justifying everything. And talking about reflection and how it's showing, COVID was one time where everyone shut shop and went back home. So what helped you sustain?
So during COVID, what we did was we still were never giving parcels. So we said, it's okay. Even if we don't run Eat Raja, that should just be fine. So we had kept our shop shut during COVID. And the day we opened up, there was a sea of crowd. People were also dying to have juices, healthy juices. By then, between the first and second wave, we already had information about how things can be made better. And we just started implementing. connecting them.
So what are your reflections from COVID, especially as far as life is concerned?
It hurts. But then I felt I have great company everywhere. Many of my own staff's parents either have had a problem or walking problem, whatever. So it still is there. But the fact that, you know, we have done something unique and nobody else can even think of coming closer to us helped me sustain and become a zero hero.
And three life lessons from the zero hero that you'd like to leave us with?
See, one, because we are a zero waste juice bar, if I can show you my t-shirt, this is my logo. And on the logo, we have already printed our 5 R's, which is, first is refuse, reduce, reuse, repair, recycle. These are the 5 things we strongly believe. In our shop, nothing ever gets wasted. We don't use single-use disposables. Having said that, there is some plastic coming in, maybe because of packaging or maybe because of some sellotapes and all of that. But we have taken it in a very nice way. So all that anybody can do is first make sure that they don't generate waste. You can look at your own self and say, how much waste did I generate today? Oh, so much. Okay. So if you can control that, it's a great thing. And then whatever you're doing, you should love. And if you have love, then nobody is going to question. And of course, hard work always pays.
Simple, profound, at the same time, doable. So amazing, amazing, Raja. Thank you so much. Because all I can think of is what the Dalai Lama had said, that the natural environment sustains the life of all beings universally. And you're contributing big time to make sure natural juices remain natural.
Yes.
When the consumer consumes it.
Definitely.
Honored to have had you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. The wait is definitely worth it. Thank you so much. And all the best on your franchisees, your growth. And just may your tribe increase and continue to inspire everyone around.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rashmi. I hope I come back with more such good news and tell you that we've started one in Dubai, one in Singapore, maybe one in America. That's the plan. I really want to go to all of these countries.
Hatastu.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care and all the very best.
Bye, Rashmi. Bye. Thank you so much. Bye.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come. Let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.